For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What is going on? It is the Eat Those Clippers podcast coming at you here on Wednesday evening after the Los Angeles Clippers fall in Game 2 in an absolute slugfest at the Crypt. Brandon Marcus, your host, joined by my co-host Matt Matawarin, still without a child, at Matt Matawarin on X, back on the Eat Those Clippers podcast. Matt, how are you, my friend?
Sports, Eat Those, Clipper Nation, Brandon Marcus, how the heck are you? That's what I'm without a child. The Clippers are tied in their series 1-1, just like the Celtics, just like the Bucks, the class of the NBA, tied at 1-1 at the moment.
The class of the NBA. Boy, if you watched yesterday's ball game, that I would tell you, you know what's not the class of the NBA? The offenses for both of those teams yesterday. Ooh, boy, that was some ugly basketball. As ugly as the Mavs' first half was in game one, it felt like that's what we kind of got for four quarters between these two teams, a real grinded out ball game. Before we even get to the basketball game itself, I want to hit on a topic that is more timely, and by saying more timely because it was just released a couple hours ago, just want your thoughts. Norman Powell selected fourth in the Sixth Man of the Year award. I have my take on that, but I'm curious to get yours first. What are your thoughts?
So I'm of the opinion that Norm Powell is one of the most important players off of the bench in the NBA this season, and I think it's higher than four. What he brings to the team and what he has brought to this team, especially during that win streak, his ability to create for himself, his mentality, his spark of offense, and the ability to actually play a little defense as well. Now, he's not the best defender in the world, as we all know. His size doesn't dictate that he can be, but Norm Powell gives his all. I think, and I know he is not really happy to be fourth in the running, and neither am I. I think he should have been a little bit higher. Now, do I think he should have won the award? That's a tough one for me, but I do think Norm is just so valuable to the bench. But the problem here with Norm as a six-man candidate is one could argue that Westbrook is even more important off the bench for the Clippers. So when you have two guys like that who are equally as important, and maybe one or the other, you can argue, because Westbrook could be argued as more important. And at this point, I may actually argue that, especially the way Powell's been playing in the playoffs. So I would like to see Norm higher for what he did in the regular season, but I can understand for sure him not winning it because there's a guy like Westbrook also coming off the bench.
Interesting. Very interesting. I think when you put those two in the same conversation, I get what you're saying in terms of the importance, but stats don't really equal importance for these awards. I mean, you look at the Rookie of the Year, it's usually whoever has the most points, rebounds, assists, you know, all those main categories, how high those numbers are. So for Sixth Man of the Year, Westbrook's not going to be there because his numbers aren't quite there. But I get what you're saying in terms of the impact. But I think that Powell is far ahead of Westbrook when it comes to Sixth Man of the Year and what goes into that award. I actually do disagree with you here. I don't know if this is a hot take, but I think that Norm Powell basically should have been third or fourth. I think that you look at what Naz Reid brought to his team, being that sixth man, being that guy that can come in whenever Gobert or Towns was missing. He was really good, and this is a ridiculous comparison or just a ridiculous thing to bring up, but I think it actually has some merit. You and I both play fantasy basketball. Reid, Portis, and Monk, all rostered in my league. Norm Powell was not. So when it comes to stats, I think it makes sense that Norm Powell comes in fourth. But if you want to look at sixth man of the year and how a team values that player, Norm Powell certainly is right there with the likes of Monk and with the likes of Bobby Portis and what they mean to their team, because they're that guy that can come in and provide that spark. They're the one that can come into the starting lineup when somebody is missing. So I get that people are complaining that they think Norm Powell was robbed, but I think if you ask a Bucks fan about the importance of Bobby Portis, or a Sacramento Kings fan about the importance of Malik Monk and what he brought to that second unit, he got a ton of minutes during the season as well, or you ask a Timberwolves fan their opinion of Reed, all three of those fan bases would be ecstatic over what their guys brought off the bench. So I think everybody's going to have a gripe because everyone loves their sixth man. So I think Powell basically should have been third or fourth, and I think they were correct there.
Isn't it funny too? Because you mentioned how much the fans love their sixth man, and that goes into the award. It doesn't go into the award as much as points do, because it's like a points-based award. But these guys who are up for sixth man of the year, you talk about Naz Reid, Bobby Portis, with Norm. It's guys that the fans absolutely love. They froth at the mouth over. You talk to any Minnesota fan, and aside from Anthony Edwards, like, Naz Reid is probably the second most popular player on the team. Now, I'm not saying Norm is the second most popular player on the Clippers, but people do love him. You know, I love him. And it same goes for Bobby Portis. So he's not the most second most popular player on the team after Giannis, although maybe he is, the way, I don't know if they've embraced Dame in that sense. So it's funny that sixth man, they're just, it should be called like the beloved teammate award or something like that. Because that's really what it usually boils down to. It's interesting, and I do agree with you. I don't think Norm should have won, and I guess it could have gone in any order, but in the importance that he has to the squad, and that leads directly into this Mavericks series, because he has not played well, and it has really shown in the way that the Clippers have been so bad offensively. And a big reason why they weren't able to pull out a victory yesterday against the Mavericks. So his importance cannot be denied. Whether he should have been sixth man of the year or not, he's got to play well for this team to do well.
Yeah, and how many times have we come on this podcast and talked about how if the Clippers don't have all three of their stars humming, and Kawhi certainly was not humming yesterday, despite what his final numbers may show you of 15 points and 7 rebounds and 4 steals. I mean, he certainly did not look like himself. You need to have other guys that produce. And Zoo wasn't the same guy that he was in game 1 because of foul trouble. And so you look at the bench, and points-wise, there really was not much. I mean, Westbrook had 7. We'll talk about him later because I thought he was fantastic last night. But Norm Powell going 2 of 10 for 6 points is unacceptable in 26 minutes. And his defense wasn't good. And you came on this podcast after game 1, and you said that you thought that Team Man should have closed over Norm Powell. And that's something that really confused you. And I said that the one thing with Ty Lue is that he'll play Terrence Mann 39 minutes, and the next game he'll suddenly disappear. And that is my biggest gripe with Tyronn Lue, is that he has this propensity of just burying Terrence Mann. And that's what happened yesterday, and Norm Powell got the minutes despite not producing. So Norm certainly is one of those guys that absolutely needs to step up in Dallas. Like, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. He has to be better, because you look at the bench, and scoring-wise, it's not going to be Westbrook, Plumlee, or probably Coffey. So it's got to be Norm Powell off the bench that provides that lift. And if he's not providing the lift, the Clippers are certainly in trouble, but despite how poorly he was yesterday, they still only lost by 3. So there's certainly margin for improvement for the Clippers, and we're going to talk about that coming up.
So, I mean, you're completely right about Ty Lue and the team man playing 39 minutes in the first game yesterday. You know, his propensity, is that what he said? Propensity, and like Hanko would say, propensity accessories. to play team man in those huge minutes and then sit him yesterday. I couldn't for the life of me, and I know you threw this out here on Twitter, on X, you were a little ahead of the game. You're like, where is team man? You mentioned on the last pod, and you said it yesterday on social media, that Ty Lue is doing exactly what you said he does and always intends to do, is sit team man. And after 39 minutes of actually brilliant play, I thought, in that first game, And then he doesn't really see the floor. He had one foul yesterday, so that had nothing to do with it. I thought they really could have used him out there. And it kind of baffles the mind to know why T-Man, who they even mentioned on the broadcast yesterday, T-Lou had said that in years past they've had to move him around to all kind of different positions, be it like backup point guard, then he'd play in all the small ball lineups, and he'd play the two, he'd play the three, sometimes even backup four. And this year his role was sort of cemented in the starting lineup, and to kind of mess around with that in game two of the playoffs, which I know Ty Lue is a tinkerer and Kawhi came back, so maybe he was just trying some stuff out. You know, the Clippers have lost both opening games against the Mavericks in the past and won the series, so maybe Ty Lue is not so concerned, and he's using that as this is kind of an experimental time. But I hope that gets fixed and T-Man gets at least minutes in the high 20s, and I would say eclipses 30, in my opinion, especially when Norm doesn't have it going, which he hasn't in this series.
Precisely. Yeah, I mean, if Norm Powell is shooting 2 of 10 from the field, then and it's going to be a close defensive ball game, bring in Terrence Mann. Let him play defense, because guess what? I trust Kawhi, PG, Zoo, and Terrence Mann a hell of a lot more than I trust PJ Washington, Luka, Kyrie, and Derek Jones Jr. I mean, they've got some guys who have certainly stepped up in the last day defensively. I mean, everyone's talking about Luka and how much he locked up the Clippers, and I'll bring up some numbers in a second, but I trust Kawhi, PG, Zoo, and Terrence Mann more than the other four guys. So if they're going to go in defensive ball game, we can go and play the defensive game right back at them and be better at it. And if Norm Powell doesn't have it going, Terrence Mann certainly is someone that can contribute on the floor. And it's funny because there's just this preconceived notion that you bring in Terrence Mann just for defense. He doesn't contribute much offensively. But I've talked about on this podcast, he does so much for the offense in terms of how he breaks down defenses. His speed and athleticism, he's able to get to the hoop, he's able to collapse the defense, he's also able to step out and shoot the three. I mean, you look at how well he has performed in the postseason as a three-point shooter, and Justin Russo, who talks about this all the time at Fly By Night on X/Twitter, always talks about he's shooting over 40% from three during the postseason. Like, it may seem like Norm Powell is the three-point shooter, but Terrence Mann can contribute as well. I mean, T-Man was 1-for-3 yesterday. Norm Powell was 2-for-4. Guess what? If he's only going to have one more three made on one more attempt, I'd much rather have the guy who can play some defense. And I just would rather see Terrence Mann get some minutes because, listen, he's a guy that does a lot. And when you win a game, when someone plays 39 minutes and then all of a sudden he only plays 21, it's an issue. It's the same thing with Zoo. I mean, when Zoo plays minor minutes or plays less minutes than what he deserves and the Clippers lose, you can point to that and be like, listen, he needs to play more minutes. And that's kind of where I'm going to take us next, because we talked about Zoo and how good he was in game one, 20 points, 15 rebounds. The Clippers really, and you can't say this as a definitive fact, but you can actually say it as something that contributed to yesterday's loss. Zoo picking up those two quick fouls yesterday in less than 3 minutes certainly was one of the top two things in my mind that lost the Clippers the game yesterday. Because I get the Clippers were right there within arm's reach of Dallas, but if Zoo stays on the floor, I think the Clippers are winning that game in the first quarter. But him getting those two quick fouls and then Plumlee playing some really crappy minutes behind him, I think really hurt the Clippers. And you could say, well, it didn't hurt them because they were all within a couple of points. But I think the Clippers would have had the lead and not been trailing had Zoo stayed on the floor. So I think that made a real impact yesterday, Matt.
I agree. Plumlee was terrible when he came in and had Zoo stayed on the floor. I agree with you. They would have gone to him, and you know, they not only would the offense have run much better, because you heard time and time again, you know, they look disoriented, the offense looks stagnant, and I that's not because Kawhi is in and came back from injury. That's not why. Without Zoo, him getting in foul trouble completely took them out of rhythm, getting in foul trouble early. I want to go back to T-Man just for a second, because you mentioned him on offense, and I just wanted to add to what you were saying about collapsing the defense, about his ability to hit threes, that he also, in game one, had 4 offensive rebounds, so that the activity there as well, creating second chances, and he had 1 offensive rebound in his 21 limited minutes in the game yesterday, so his activity overall, be it collapsing the defense and kicking it out, be it the offensive boards. I mean, we know he had that one dunk off a miss that was just stellar. So his activity all around on the offensive end and not just the defensive end is a reason to get him in there. And then Zoo, he had 13 and 12 yesterday, and he plays an extra, 4 to 5 minutes or whatever the case may be if he didn't have to sit out. And guess what? Yeah, that is the difference in a three-point game that the Clippers really could have won, and I don't want to say should have, but many opportunities to win that game with many blown open shots and some defensive lapses. But Zoo is one of the huge reasons that the Clippers lost the game yesterday. I'm curious what your second reason is, but I agree with you 100%. And I know that we'll go on the positives spin later, but only losing by three with Zoo being out that early, I do think this is a game that they could have won. Things can be fixed and tightened up moving forward, so we can hang our hats on that. That's the way I feel about Zoo.
Yeah, 100%. And guess what? There were only three players that had a positive plus minus yesterday. The first one was Westbrook plus eight, and that certainly checks out. If you watch the ball game and don't just look at the box score, Zoo is number two. The Clippers were plus four when he was on the floor. And so if Zoo needs to stay on the floor, and he did a great job not getting into foul trouble in the second half, because, listen, he played the second quarter, didn't pick up that third foul, and they didn't get into foul trouble later on in the third or fourth quarter. So kudos to him for staying on the floor. He was able to play a ton of minutes, and that's why the Clippers were able to eventually take that lead that they ended up relinquishing when they went small. And we'll talk about that in a second. But just to give you an idea, I mean, you look at that first quarter. The Clippers started 3 of 15. They had no field goals in a six-minute stretch. The end of the first quarter, 5 for 20 from the field. The non-PG guys were 2 of 15. I mean, and the Clippers still only lost by 3. I mean, you really cannot play much worse offensively than the Clippers did yesterday. It was their worst field goal percentage this season. They missed 29 of 40 shots outside the paint. I mean, you look at those numbers, and you say, wow, there is a lot to improve upon. So yes, Matt, I completely agree with you that I think that the margin for improvement is so high for the Clippers. And you know I've come on here and I've been negative about this team. But I've heard some stuff today that, oh, Dallas figured things out. Listen, the Clippers just weren't good enough. They weren't good enough at all. And they were incorporating a guy, we've certainly buried the lead in Kawhi Leonard, who is back on the floor. And there's just so much room for improvement from what we saw yesterday. And to only lose by three when you play one of your worst offensive ball games, I'm certainly encouraged about that one.
And we talk about national narrative from time to time on this show, and I'm glad you brought it up because it's so funny. The Mavericks are back. Luka figured it out. He's sensational. Him and Kyrie, the things Kyrie was doing. This is a mature team. These guys finally figured out a way to beat the Clippers. Guys, they beat him by three in one of the worst offensive performances that the Clippers have had all season. So hats off, but like you said, you change a few things. You tighten a few things up. Kawhi shoots a little bit better. T-Man's in there. Look, Norm Powell hits two more shots. The game is on the side of the Clippers. The Clippers are going to Dallas 2-0. So it's never good to lose. Of course we want the win, but there are plenty of things to be encouraged about in that they can change if the Clippers really focus and really, really tighten things up.
Listen, we have certainly buried the lead, and so we're going to take a quick break, and we will come back and talk about Kawhi Leonard.
Save big money now on new siding from LP Smart Side at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP Smart Side today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Okay, so we somehow went about 18 minutes without really mentioning Kawhi and his return. And I was dead wrong, Matt. I thought for sure that if he was not available game one, there was no shot in hell he was going to play game two. But Justin Wilson, our friend over at LA Clippers Film, he tweeted out, I think the Clippers are going to try and steal game one without Kawhi and then have him come back game two. And wouldn't you know it, Justin tweeted the night before game two, picture of Kawhi Leonard. So our friend Justin Wilson is a little bit in the know over there in Clipperland. He knew something. And listen, the odds makers started to catch what Justin was dropping because they went from the Clippers being a 1.5 or 2.5 point underdog to a favorite in the game yesterday. And Dan Bezris, our friend over at Sports Ethos, always talks about how he fades a team when the star returns from a layoff. And if you did that yesterday, you would have won money if you took the Mavs, because it certainly takes that game or two to incorporate that star player. And it certainly felt that way yesterday, Matt. There are a couple of times where I wrote down in my notes, because you know how I like to keep track of things during the ball game. And a couple of times I wrote way too much ISO with Kawhi on the floor. Another time I wrote how the Clippers are just continuing to go one-on-one and not going through their offense. And we saw that too many times yesterday where it really felt like the Clippers were trying to get Kawhi going in a way. And I think that actively hurt the Clippers' offense. Listen, he was good defensively. When he gets four steals, he certainly was solid defensively. I just feel like there's just way too much ISO, way too much one-on-one with Kawhi and PG. Hey, go ahead, it's your turn. Hey, no, it's my turn. Let's get Kawhi going. I just feel like that happened way too much yesterday to the detriment of the Clippers, and that's an easy thing that I think the Clippers can clean up going into Game 3.
100%. I mean, the ball movement at times was just non-existent. ISO, 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 your turn, my turn. I mean, you want to see that ball zipping around. How many times have we said it? How much better the Clippers play, or how much trouble they have against teams that are doing that when they themselves are not doing that? Now, granted, they're going against he's one of the top assist guys, but to be honest with you, not one of the best ball movers in the world in Luka Doncic. I mean, he does like to hold on to the ball quite a bit, but to the Clippers, for the Clippers end of it, on the offensive end, I saw the exact same thing you saw, because it was impossible not to, which is Harden pounding the ball quite a bit, Kawhi doing the same thing when he had it, and just not a lot of movement there. The only time they really had juice, honestly, was on a fast break if Russ got his hands on the ball, and then he would zip down the court and good things would happen. I do think that that Kawhi playing 35 minutes is hopefully a great sign. I mean, you always say you have to see how the knee is going to react, and of course we do. But it seems like once he gets his legs underneath him, so to speak, and brushes the rust off a little bit, it's definitely going to be the Clippers' benefit. You know, you hear a couple of things out there. You read a couple of articles that say, well, should the Clippers have actually sat him for this game? Would they have been better off without Kawhi? And I don't necessarily subscribe to that. I mean, maybe the end result says that I don't think so. I mean, you got to, if Kawhi's ready to go, you plug him back in there and you see what happens. And now he's hopefully starting to get a little more rhythm with the team. I mean, you saw it on that last play where he clearly got fouled, by the way. That was the ridiculous challenge and successful challenge on the layup that should have been a 3-point play. But he's getting into rhythm now, and I think it's only positive things moving forward with Kawhi, unless the knee acts up, of course. But was it a detriment to the team? I mean, perhaps the final numbers would say so. But getting him back in there for what seems to be a long series, having him in there, I'm considering this him being in there a win. Of course, the game is a loss, and he didn't shoot all that well. But he did play great defense, like you said. I think it's a win to have Kawhi back in there.
100%. And you can say that the Clippers probably had a better chance to win yesterday if Kawhi didn't play, while also saying it's a great thing that he's back, because in a 7-game series, I want Kawhi Leonard back on the floor. And you may have had that one game yesterday that you lost that you very well could have won if one or two shots go your way. But listen, Kawhi's back. That's a damn good thing. Now, for yesterday's game, who knows? I mean, the guy got four steals and a block as well. So who knows if your defense is as good without Kawhi Leonard on the floor yesterday. I mean, so it's possible you can say that maybe they would have been better off offensively without him, because their offense certainly looked muddied considering they were trying to get him involved. But listen, this guy barely practiced, if he even practiced at all. So really, it was shaking off rust yesterday, and you got to see how he develops. And he was much better, I think, in the second half than he was in the first half. He looked really bad in the first half, but it looked like he had a little more juice in the second half, and I think that'll carry over to game three. And yes, I'd much rather have Kawhi Leonard on my team in my lineup. I mean, you're looking at Amir Coffey versus Kawhi Leonard. I mean, come on. I love Amir, but I'd much rather have Kawhi on the floor. So I'm glad he's back. I think he certainly looked rusty. I think it certainly hurt the offense trying to get him involved a little bit too much. And I thought he maybe was trying to force things. And he had a lot of stuff that was flat, which showed that he certainly just didn't have the legs underneath him that he wanted. And when the Clippers were humming, Kawhi Leonard was hitting a couple of threes a ball game. And yesterday, I mean, you look at PG, you look at Harden, you look at Kawhi, all three of them were terrible from three. And so you need to get all three of those guys going. But when Kawhi can hit a couple in a game, then you know your offense is in pretty good shape.
Yeah, you took the words right out of my mouth, because I was going to say, you know, Kawhi's 0 of 5 from downtown, of course, contributes. But the Clippers hit 18 threes in game one. They hit eight yesterday. Mm-hmm. You know, Kawhi hits, well, one, it's tied. Kawhi hits two, you're up by three. But what I'm trying to say is that him being in the offense is not the only thing that bogged it down. They shot terribly. Like you said, there's a lot of ISO ball. It seems like they were a little discombobulated, Zoo getting in foul trouble. There was a lot that went wrong, and there was a lot that was very ugly. And, you know, you can credit Dallas's defense a lot for that, but also shots just weren't falling. And I do think that, and like you said, 100 times out of 100, I'll pick Kawhi to be in there over, well, basically anybody, especially anybody on the roster. So it can only go up moving forward, because yesterday was just butt ugly.
Okay, so just to give you some numbers to kind of add to yesterday, just because I think that they're interesting to talk about, is you look at what the Clippers did yesterday and what the Mavs did yesterday. So the Clippers had a better free throw rate, a better offensive rebound rate, a better turnover rate, shot better at the rim, had more points in the paint, had more fast break points, had more second chance points. All that according to Hardwood Paroxysm, I don't know how to say that word, HP Basketball on Twitter. I mean, listen, it's unbelievable. And Ty Lue even said yesterday, we won every category except the game. And Ty Lue, I mean, he's right. And Law Murray went on to describe that even more. The Clippers outpaced the Mavs in points in the paint, second chances, points off turnovers, fast break points, opponents' turnovers, offensive rebounds, mid-range field goals made, and free throws made. But they just couldn't hit a three, and they couldn't hit a mid-range shot. And so because of that, the Clippers lost. But the Clippers did everything right yesterday except score the basketball. And so you get a couple more shots to go in, and you're going to be in good shape. And what's interesting is there's now this sudden narrative going around that the Mavs have figured things out defensively. And this is the Mavs team that was humming. And this is the one that went 16-2 in 18 games. Like, listen, the Clippers missed a lot of shots, and they did some stupid stuff. I mean, the amount of times the Clippers had four guys, like, in a very small area when Kawhi Leonard was trying to drive. Like, you got to be better if you're going to have Kawhi have that ISO one-on-one, at least give him space. Like the spacing, Justin Wilson posted a clip earlier today. The spacing was just not good. But you look at the Clippers and how Dallas defended them. Luka apparently held the Clippers to 6 of 24. I mean, you look at game one, the Clippers were much better against Luka. PJ Washington held the Clippers to 7 of 19. Maxi Kleba held the Clippers to 3 of 17. Like, come on. I mean, these are not defensive player of the year, guys. This is just the Clippers not shooting well. And listen, Dallas Mavericks fans, you're right. Game one, Dallas just didn't shoot well. And finally, the averages, I mean, they went back to their average in the second half, but the Clippers still won because they took advantage. In this case, the Clippers didn't take advantage with how poorly Dallas was shooting out of time, and Dallas really didn't take advantage at most points of how poorly the Clippers were playing, because Dallas could have been up double figures. But because the Clippers only committed 4 turnovers, and because the Clippers are winning all these other categories, that's why they're still in the game. So yeah, I'm not buying that the Dallas defense is going to suddenly just stop this Clippers offense. I just don't think that's going to be the case.
I don't buy it either. I mean, because Gafford, of course, got hurt, but he's one of the reasons that they're so highly thought of. The Mavericks, once they inserted Gafford into the starting lineup, which was a genius move by Jason Kidd, which, by the way, he did because his hand was forced because Lively was out with an injury. But the genius move of Kidd to get Gafford in the starting lineup, he's been ineffective. Lively, my X factors, I was completely wrong, has been relatively ineffective. A couple of good rebounding games. There's one thing that concerns me about the Dallas defense and Luka in particular, and I heard this on No Dunks, that people are starting to call him White Claw.
Get out of here.
That's a great nickname.
Great nickname, but it's not true at all.
Funny, so that concerns me.
White Claw.
White Claw. Yeah, I heard that on the No Dunks pod. I forget who they said made it up. I apologize, but it's a great nickname, and it concerns me a little bit that it's so good.
Wow, that's a good nickname. All right, so listen, I said that my number one my number two thing with the Clippers was Terrence Mann. I think that's what it says. My number two. Number one was the Clippers going small. I just how much I hate when the Clippers do this. When the Clippers go small and they completely ignore guys like Zoo and they ignore guys like Terrence Mann. And in this case, the Clippers went small late, and I think it really hurt them. And it hurt them when they took Russell Westbrook out of the ballgame, which is so strange. But when you have a small ball lineup, you need somebody that's going to be active down low defensively and get those rebounds. And I just thought the Clippers weren't good when they went small. And you look at Maxi Kleba, and you look at Gafford, and you look at Lively. And when those guys were off the floor yesterday, Dallas was a plus 24 with no center, according to Law Murray. A plus 24 with no center. I think that may be in the series. Either way, it's one of those things where they've been drastically better without a center. And the Clippers don't have those guys like Marcus Morris, Robert Covington, Nick Batum that can play that small ball center. So you just need to be able to be tighter defensively, get rebounds. And if you're going to go small to counter against Dallas, you need to make your shots. And when Norm Powell's not hitting shots, then the Clippers are in some trouble. And so I thought that the number two reason why the Clippers, or number one reason why the Clippers lost yesterday, was because they went small and they didn't do it correctly. I mean, Russ went to the... So talking about Russell Westbrook, he was absolutely tremendous when he came in for Terrence Mann at the 7-minute mark of the third quarter. Immediately, he hit PG for a three on a fast break outlet. Then he got a rebound on the other end. Then he fed Zoo, and Zoo got free throws out of it. 7-0 run immediately to tie it. Then you look, and Russ had a layup after his missed three was back-tapped by Zoo. Immediately charged the hoop. He was unafraid to get to the hoop. Then you look later. Russ got a block. He found Zoo for a floater 2 possessions later. He was huge. Then Dallas goes on a 9-0 run. Immediately when Russ goes to the bench, that extends to a 14-0 run total. 6-point lead becomes a 3-point deficit, and that's all she wrote. So I think when you took out Russ, because Ty Lue was talking about how he wanted to bring him in later in the game, and you went small in the wrong way, I think that's where they lost the ball game.
Small in the wrong way is the perfect way to put it, because if you're going small, and for some reason it seems like a lot of this is a reaction to the Mavericks inserting Maxi Kleba into the mix, and it's just like, okay, but you can still play Zoo, and you can still, you don't have to go small against that particular Mavericks lineup. But I think with Norm just being so ice cold, with the energy that Westbrook brings, I mean, he had 9 rebounds yesterday, the second most rebounds on the team in 24 minutes, and then just the complete baffling isolation on the bench of Team Man. Those guys have to be in the mix if you're going small, because I mentioned T-Man's offensive rebounds in game one. You mentioned Westbrook's rebounding and we mentioned his fast break, initiating the break and all that kind of stuff. Unfortunately, that's not something that Norm, he can initiate a break, but he's not going to get in there usually for a rebound, especially an offensive rebound. He can create, of course, but he's just, it's just, it just wasn't working yesterday, and that was the wrong small ball lineup, I believe. If T. Lou was determined to go small ball, which maybe he felt his hand was forced because Plumlee, like I said, was awful. He didn't even try Tice, which is fine. But to not have one of Westbrook, T-Man, or even both on the floor, and I know traditionally Harden and Westbrook on the floor, we said it hasn't worked out well, but it certainly can, and especially if you're going to go in those small ball lineups and you want a little more defense with Harden out there, Westbrook has proven that he can provide that, and of course T-Man can. So you may be forced to go small, quote unquote, when Zoo has to sit. But you're right, doing it in the right way with the right guys is going to be something that T-Lou, which I'm sure they're going to do, but they're going to need to look at the film and say, okay, with that lineup and Norm playing the way is it, this is not the small ball lineup that is going to win us games, especially in this series.
Yeah, they just need to figure out the right combination, Matt. And I just felt like yesterday they didn't really do that. And I thought that obviously Ty Lue wanted to stick with Westbrook for as long as possible, and then he took him out. And I just thought that really cost the Clippers. I think that substitution, it didn't look like Westbrook really needed the rest at that point. I think you needed to just go with what you had in that moment and see if it worked out. And in this case, I think you should just rode him and seen how he did. And if he needed to get a couple minute breather, fine. But I also tweeted this yesterday to Lucas Hahn, who does a great job for 213 Hoops. And he was talking about, hey, you may need to get a breather for Zoo or for Harden at this point, or PG, whatever it might be. And I was like, you may not, because with all these TV timeouts, these guys, I don't think, need the breathers that you would think they might need, because I understand yesterday was a really physical game and really tough back and forth, but I just don't think you need that same couple of minute breather when you're having these long 3 minute plus timeouts, and they're happening a little more often as well. So I just feel like you're getting more built in breathers with those timeouts, and that you may not need that. I just don't feel like Westbrook is one of those guys that needs it. It certainly didn't seem like his play was slipping, and so he needed to come out. So in that situation, I just think you really need to keep him on the floor. And then you go with Russ, Powell, Harden, and 213. And that lineup, it just wasn't good enough. And normally, you like those Powell, Harden, 213, Zoo lineups, as the quote-unquote Powell Rangers at our friends Clips and Dip podcast say. But I just don't think you can go Russ, Harden, Powell, and 213. I think that's too small. I think you need to have a guy like Terrence Mann in there instead of Powell. And ideally, you'd like to have Zoo on the floor also. But I just feel like the Clippers just went away from Russ at the wrong time, went away from Zoo at the wrong time yesterday. And then, of course, you start with the Zoo foul trouble at the start of the ball game. And I think that just too many little things went against the Clippers. And yet, despite that, they only lost by three. Of course, the PG3 at the end made it a three-point game. It was really a six-point game. But still, it was a close game, and the Clippers just had all these silly things that went against them. I think there's a lot that they're able to clean up.
A lot that they're able to clean up. You mentioned the rest. A couple of things about the end of the game. But you mentioned the rest for Zoo and for Harden and how they may not need it with all the TV timeouts. And I don't know if you've caught this in the last couple of podcasts. I don't particularly think that Jason Kidd is the best coach in the world. It's just my personal opinion. I could be wrong about that, but one thing that he does consistently is that if there are free throws on either end, and Luka's not shooting the free throws, he'll take them out and just sit them for just the extra whatever minute, 30 seconds, 20 seconds it is that the free throw, because he knows the timeout is coming afterwards. Jason Kidd does, so it's just a way to get a few extra seconds. Do you think that's a good idea, or do you think that's something smart or insignificant as far as extra rest is concerned?
I noticed that as well, and it's funny because Luka was pissed when he was subbed out, and it turned out that was going to be when I believe that Jason Kidd was either going to challenge a call or was going to call a timeout either way, and so Luka was going to sit either way, and then immediately he came back in after that TV timeout. So he really
it happened more than once.
Yeah, he didn't really even sub out. It's just one of those things where it really was trying to buy him that maybe 1 minute or two before the TV timeout. And I see that a ton in college basketball where coaches see that the under 16 timeouts coming, or the under 12 timeouts coming in men's basketball, or you look at women's basketball, the under 5 timeout is coming halfway through a quarter, and they go and they try and take a player out, let's say with 5:30 to go in women's basketball in the first quarter, and then there's a TV timeout immediately after that 5-minute mark on the first dead ball, so it may be at 4:30 or something left to go in the quarter, so you only had your player miss 1 minute of actual game time, and you gave them more rest, because who knows how many stoppages for free throws there may have been between 5:30 and 5 minutes, and then of course you get the TV timeout as well, and then you can bring them back. So essentially, it may only be 1 minute you're sitting them out of game time, but it's about 5 or 6 minutes of actual rest that they're getting. So yeah, I think it's smart by Jason Kidd to do that, and certainly something that I think that the Clippers can do in a series like this. When you're in the playoffs and there's all these TV timeouts, you may not need to rest guys for as long as you might think. I mean, a guy like Kawhi Leonard, sure, but in this situation with Russell Westbrook, I just don't think it was warranted.
Not with Russ, but I feel like with Harden, you could buy him that extra couple of minutes, you know, throughout the game in totality. I just don't think it's the worst move in the world, and I noticed it, and as did you, and it was really funny when Luka got pissed, and then they're like, no, we're bringing you back in. Don't worry about it. So Jason Kidd, his great call, his second great call was to challenge the Kawhi play towards the end of the game that. And I don't know if you even think it's worth talking about. I didn't think the challenge should have been successful.
I think it was.
I think that you don't think it was a foul.
No, and the last 2-minute report came out today, and it didn't even mention it. So I think that it was the right call. Apparently, there was one foul that should have been called on. This should have been called on Dallas for fouling PG, I believe, and then there was another one that went the other way. That should have been called as the Clippers trying to intentionally foul, and I don't think it was called. So yeah, I think he got the ball going after Kawhi. I understand, like, live it looked like it was a foul, but I think when they showed the replays, I think that he did hit the ball. So I think that's, I mean, listen, who knows what terms of hands, part of the ball, whatever, and all that. But yeah, I think that he hit the ball. So I don't think it's worth really going too deep into, because I don't think it would have changed the ball game, because it was only 1 point, and the Clippers still didn't end up getting what they needed on the other end, but still, it's, you know, them's the breaks, my friend.
Them's are the breaks. So perhaps it wasn't a foul. I'll go to my dying day saying it was, only because, guess what, guys? News break. I'm a Clippers fan. I'm wishing it was a foul.
Exactly, and that's totally understandable. So listen, let's hope the Clippers are able to clean things up on the offensive end for Game 3. I think it'll be really important to see Tim Hardaway Jr.'s status. Because if Tim Hardaway Jr. can't go because of that ankle sprain, and Daniel Gafford can't go because of that back injury, I think that really limits Dallas. I just don't think that they're as good of a basketball team without those two guys. I just don't think that in terms of guarding Zoo, I certainly think that they drop off without Gafford. And I also think that without Tim Hardaway Jr., I was looking at him as a guy that, I've said this numerous times in this pod, that can go and get 5 or 6 threes in a game. And that's certainly something he could do at home, where those bench players tend to perform better. And if you don't have Tim Hardaway Jr. on the floor, that certainly is a bench player that could go off, that is out of the equation. So I really think the Clippers have a chance to take both these games in Dallas. Obviously, all you're asking for is a split. You get a split, you come back and you win game 5, and all of a sudden you got to win one game in the next 2, and you advance to the next round. So just take one of the next 2, but it'd be nice to see them take game 3.
It would be nice to see them take game 3 and just grab home court right back. And you're right about Tim Hardaway, because PJ Washington, yeah, he hit those 3 threes, one of them, a couple of which are humongous, and Kleber had 2, but over a guy like Tim Hardaway, especially at home, like you mentioned, you'd have those guys, Derek Jones Jr. as well, have those guys shooting threes all day over a guy like Tim Hardaway, because he's so streaky. If he gets going, then you can forget about it, because he will have 4, 5, 6. And you mentioned fantasy. He's a guy that bounces on and off rosters, because guess what? If you need threes at the end of the week,
yeah,
THJ is one of the guys that you're picking up, because guy can get hot and get threes in a hurry.
Yep, no doubt about that. All right, friends. This is the end of the podcast. I am at BD Marcus on X, at Matt Matawarren for my co-host, of course, Ethos Clippers handle as well. if you give us a 5-star rating or review the podcast as well. Always does help as we continue to grow. And a big shout out to our friends over at the Believe Podcast Network, who continues to help us grow this pod as more and more people continue to listen to this one. And I hope these playoff podcast episodes are enjoyable for you, as the Clippers, by the time you listen to this, most likely will be playing today as we record this on Wednesday night. Or actually, no, the Clippers play on Friday. Holy cow. We have another day off. So I knew we timed this perfectly, Matt. So the Clippers will play on Friday, and that will be at 5 o'clock p.m. So we'll hopefully get you a podcast out Friday night to break down that ball game. Dallas right now, by the way, is a 4.5-point favorite. I think that's a little bit too large, in my opinion. It's a little bit of an overreaction to game two. And then the Clippers obviously will play against Dallas on Sunday at 12:30 on ABC. Would really be funny. I mean, not really that funny, but it would be funny if the Clippers lose game three and then all of a sudden they win another matinee game and winning game four, and all of a sudden it's 2-2 going back, and both wins for the Clippers would be these 12 p.m. starts. But we'll see how things go, Matt. But listen, first things first, let's go and win game three on Friday, huh?
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah, let's do it. And getting both, and it'd be so ironic to win both matinee games and to lose both night games. Before we go, just really quickly, White Claw, so cool. I need something like that. There is a Modelo specialty drink called Piña Picante. I don't know if that should be my name, but it's the first one that I'm throwing out there for my new beverage nickname, Piña Picante. We'll workshop it. But if you guys want to, you know, out there in Ethos Clipper Nation land, Piña Picante, some other sort of nickname, we'll think about it.
Go ahead, hit up Matt on X and tell him what you think of his nicknames and how we can build this nickname base going forward. All right, friends, for Matt, I am Brandon. Until next time, go Clips.
Go Clips.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.